Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey everyone, welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne, your host. Thanks for joining me this morning. I love when I have a guest on the show that I have not had to have an opportunity to talk a great deal with. And this morning, we are kicking off our series on the candidate experience. HR Latte, you may or may not know, is a fast-paced show. We've got 30 to 40 minutes where we're going to try and jam in as much information as possible. My guest this morning is Shannon Smedstad. Shannon, thanks for joining me today. Shannon is with CEB, and we're going to be talking about employment branding and how important that is in creating a valuable and wonderful candidate experience. Shannon, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Well, before we dive into my questions, and we have several, I want you to give us a little bit more than your elevator pitch of who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Shannon Smedstad, as you mentioned, and I currently serve as the Employment Brand Director for CEB. CEB is a global business research and advisory firm, and we help companies become better at what they do. Prior to CEB, I spent many, many years at GEICO in campus recruiting as well as employment branding. And if we rewind back even further, I originally joined the fascinating world of recruiting when it was actually cutting edge to fax resumes to my clients. So talent business for a while.
All right. Well, and I love that. I love that you have this long history in recruiting. It makes a great deal of difference in understanding the changes that have occurred in this industry over the last several years, in particular the topic that we're talking about today. And one of my biggest concerns is that we have been talking about the candidate experience for years. I can remember attending a conference. It was probably in 2007, 2008. Recruit Fest took place in, the first one took place in Toronto. And I remember sitting in a park, a bunch of us all on benches. There had to have been maybe close to 50 to 70 of us sitting around on these benches, and Jerry Crispin standing up in front of all of us talking about the candidate experience, and he's done wonderful work, but we still haven't nipped it in the bud, right? We still haven't solved the problem that is out there. As a matter of fact, I was helping my son fill out an online application just the other day, and he was so frustrated by the process, and it was a big name brand ATS, right? And these young kids or millennials and Gen Zs that are out there filling out, they don't get it. They don't understand it. And they turn to their parents, and their parents go, that's not how I did it, right? So we still right. have this issue right. of helping the job-seeking public understand the best way to find a job, apply for a job, and then make themselves the ideal candidate. And thank right. goodness there are folks like you that have spent the last several years talking about it. And so I want to kick it off by asking you about candidate experience in particular. When you hear that phrase, right, and this is something that I'm going to ask each of my guests this month, when you hear that phrase, what does it make you think about? What does it mean to you, candidate experience?
So I feel like I can come at it, Rayanne, in two different directions. One, from my role in employment branding and as a practitioner, and then also as somebody who recently went through the job search. It was this time last year that I myself was a candidate. So candidate experience to me means all of the touch points that someone has with your organization. It also means kind of putting myself in the job seeker's shoes and creating the type of end-to-end experience that I personally would want to have, or that I'd want my best friend or my mom or someone to have. You know, it's really thinking about all of the ways that a candidate can interact with us, whether it's through an online channel, whether it's on the phone, whether it's in person, and then helping my organization make that experience the best that they can while staying kind of within the parameters of our legal and HR policies and procedures. And then from, you know, my personal experience, it's that feeling that you're left with when you've found that job that looks perfect for you and you're like, oh my gosh, this has my name written all over it. And then you apply and you don't hear anything back. Or you do and it's 4 months later and you look at the big brand name that you were so excited about and it's that feeling you're left with. That experience leaves you either feeling really positive or potentially feeling negative. So, you know, when I think about the candidate experience, it's kind of everything that encompasses what you're going through from beginning to end.
I love that, and it makes perfect sense. And I can appreciate your personal experience being a candidate and recognizing the issues, the problems that are out there. I myself have gone through that recently, and it is not fun, but it also grants us some empathy about what's happening to job seekers, applicants, and candidates that are out there right now. So, interestingly enough, Shannon, when I was looking at your background, you launched way before most people. Well, I'm going to say you were in the top echelon, the 0.5% of individuals that work in HR that actually thought about social media. You launched an HR social media strategy in 2008. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine, you know, when we consider that that is 7 years ago and how far we've come in social media, how far we've come with online communications, the changes that it has brought to how we communicate personally. So, of course, it's going to translate into an altered way to communicate professionally. I cannot even imagine what you went through. I can. Trying to get approvals, talking to CEOs and other execs about the direction that you needed to be going in order to do this. Can you share some of the obstacles you've faced, and do any of them still exist today, has executive management really begun to understand that we need to have an online presence in order to create a strong employment brand?
So 7 years ago, oh my goodness, time has definitely flown, I'll say that. So back in 2008, I'll never forget, so I was at GEICO, I was in campus recruiting, and the VP of Human Resources had just gotten back from a conference, and she pulled me into her office and said, you know, there's a lot of talk about social media and employment branding, you know, what do you think that means for GEICO? And you know, I looked at her and I said, I don't know, but I want to find out. And that was really where this journey started. And so back then, it was still figuring out, is social media, does it have any stickiness? You know, there was still a lot of talk about it being a fad. So there was, of course, in doing the research and kind of diving into, well, what is social media? How could we use it? Why would we use it? And so that was... you know, that was back then. So there was definitely, that was a big obstacle and big hurdle. I don't think that exists anymore. And then kind of fast forward, as we were in the nascent stages of the employment brand and social journey at GEICO, it was then getting the recruiters to use social media, right? We were starting to build out our channels and we had an idea of where we wanted to go. But then and now I still believe that the power lies in the people that use it and how they use it and how frequently they're using it. So getting a team of recruiters using these social tools and getting them comfortable, that was, you know, that was where the value was. And that was something that we worked really hard to build up. It's something we're working on at CEB too. How do we help our recruiters embed these social tools into their already busy workday? Because one of the things that I've found is that if your recruiters don't have the knowledge, the interest, and time, it's going to be really hard for them to fit social activities and social recruiting into their day that's filled with working with hiring managers, going to meetings, filling recs, getting on the phones with their candidates. So that has been something that I saw 7 years ago and something that, you know, we continuously are working on, can always be improved.
Right.
And then, you know, there was the conversations early on about, well, how are we going to measure this, right? That's always the question. Well, how are we going to know if we're successful? How are we going to measure it? How are we going to know that this is working? And I think that that has been kind of a constant thread from the very beginning, and you pull forward, and we're still having those conversations too.
Yeah, I just posted something out the other day about that, the continuing conversation of how do we measure social media. And I don't know about you, but I never worried about that part of it because I knew it's where we needed to be. And I have just a quick question, a bounce back question from, did you ever think that it was just a fad?
Did I ever think? Maybe early on, but I had some early personal experiences using social where I saw the value for myself, where I saw my network increasing. I saw the people that I was talking to, I was having valuable conversations online. So I started seeing the value, and I think that's really what helped me continuously, you know, push forward, was that I knew it could work if you just invested yourself and some time.
Right, right. Good. So let's move forward a little bit and talk more about candidate experience. Is social media important to developing a valuable candidate experience? How important is it when we consider employment branding?
Mm-hmm. So to me, social media is another communication channel. So I think that we should definitely give a nod to social media. I think it needs to be a part of our overall candidate experience and talent acquisition, talent attraction strategy, but it's not the silver bullet. I think a lot of people think that, oh, if we launch a Facebook page, we're just going to bring in these quality candidates. And I think that you have to go into social being a bit more realistic and know that this is an additional way to attract talent and to tell your story and to, you know, to bring in quality candidates, but also to possibly dissuade candidates who aren't a fit. So I think that social media plays an important part as a communication channel. So much like in my life, and probably your life too, Rand, like social media has been a valuable tool. Sometimes it's easier to, you know, get in touch with our friends via Facebook Messenger than it is to get them on the phone. And
so I use it for work too.
I use it for work too. If I'm like, oh, I need to get somebody, you go on Facebook and shoot them a message, and I'll hear from them.
That's where they are. Mm-hmm. It goes back to that go to where they are hanging out. That's where they're hanging out, right? And you want to reach them quickly.
It's part of our daily lives.
It is.
Yeah.
And I'm most people who know me know how much I hate email. So I much prefer a Facebook message or a text. You know, just let's get it quickly. Let's move forward. And that probably comes from my years being a recruiter where I wanted information quickly, right? I needed it quickly in order to be able to do my job the most efficient way possible.
My kind of a little side note, my husband is a director of marketing for a large logistics and transportation company, and he asked me the other day, he's like, do you ever check your voicemail? And I said, well, my voicemail comes to my email because it's all VoIP and online. So I'm like, yeah, I do, but I don't check the voicemail on my phone, the phone that's physically sitting here. I very rarely remember to. So we want to be able to get in touch with people where they are and using the channel that's most comfortable for them. And for a lot of people, social is that channel.
Right.
And when I think about the candidate experience, I think it plays a part in providing a valuable experience. You know, people want to connect. They want to be able to get in contact with someone. And if they've already tried leaving a message or sending an email and they haven't received the response that they haven't received a response or they haven't received the response that they want, people will reach out on social, whether it's a tweet or a direct message on Facebook or a message through LinkedIn. So I think that kind of have to play in all of those spaces to provide candidate experience, because we're working with a lot of busy professionals, or if you've got a campus recruiting program, the students aren't sitting in front of their computer all day like we might be in the office. They're on the go, so we have to be able to get our message in front of them or give them a way to communicate with us.
Right. And so I really appreciate you being here today talking about the value of employment branding, which sometimes translates into social media when we consider the candidate experience. You are listening to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne. My guest today is Shannon Smedstadt. Shannon is the Employment Branding Director at CEB, and we're going to dive a little bit deeper into this conversation about the value of employment branding. Shannon, what are job seekers, applicants, candidates? And I always qualify it because I think that, for me, they are separate, right? There is this separate area where a job seeker is somebody looking for a job. They have not made a connection. An applicant is somebody who has applied for a job. They haven't spoken to anybody. And for me, a candidate is the person, the job seeker applicant, that has received communication back. They are the ones that are involved in the engagement process. So what are job seekers, applicants, and candidates ultimately looking for in the job search experience besides the goal of finding a job? What are they looking for? When we consider candidate experience, when we consider employment branding, what do they need in order to feel valued, or what are they looking for? Maybe they don't even know what they need. What are they looking for?
So I did a little crowdsourcing on this question of some friends who recently went through the job search, and also pulled from kind of, I can think about my own experience, but I also wanted to get some data and get some information. And so if you don't mind, I just want to share it. I thought this was an interesting nugget as I was going through and preparing for the call. CEB research from 2013 suggests that 49% of job applicants are left with a negative view of an organization following an unsuccessful application, and that 1 in 5 of these people actually stop buying from the company as a consequence.
Wow.
That to me, I was like, that's a great statistic. It's very eye-opening. So, and that can translate to real business performance and bottom line numbers. You know, if you are a large retailer and all of a sudden half of your applicants are left with a negative view, and that could be 20% of your buyers are now going to say, I'm not going to go to XYZ company or grocery store or car dealership or car rental or insurance company or whoever. If you're in a B2C environment, that has big impact.
That's big. And I think this speaks to how consumer brand and employment brand are starting to really blend together, right? We're really starting to see a blurred line between them.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So I think that going back to, what do job seekers, applicants, candidates, what do they want? I think it's communication, right? They want to hear back from recruiters, or when they submit an application, they want, at the very least, something that says, we received your application and we're going to look at it, and something that can help us kind of dispel that online application black hole myth. And I think that honesty and timely follow-up also. So I think job seekers just, they want to know. They want to know, am I being considered? Is this a fit? Is someone going to get in touch with me? And then when they do hear from someone, just shoot it to a straight, right? Tell me what's going on. Ask me the questions. Let me know what's happening with my status. Am I progressing? Am I not? And then the place where I think it gets tricky, particularly for candidates, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, Rayanne, but I think that once you're in the interview process, and if you're not being considered anymore, to get that email that says, thanks but no thanks, we've got other candidates who are being considered or whose background and experience more closely aligns, you're kind of left with, is that really the case, or was there something that maybe I could have done differently? So I think candidates want honesty, but we also have to balance that with, from an organizational standpoint, what can we really share? And then also based on what our legal departments and general counsel are saying we can and cannot share as it relates to someone's employment status.
Don't you think it comes down to being kind and being respectful? I mean, really, really, in the end, I cannot tell you how many candidates that I spoke with that when I told them they weren't getting the job, how grateful they were to hear that message, right? Because they so often don't hear back from anybody. They don't know that they can continue their search. They kind of wait and they hang around and they are on the edge of their seat hoping to receive a message that, hey, yes, we're going to move forward in the process, or you know what? No, we've identified candidates that are more closely aligned with where we want to go with this particular role. And when they don't hear, and I've gone through this, I've watched my children and significant others go through this where they just hang on. They're kept hanging on, and it's a complete lack of respect for somebody else's time and energy.
You used a really good word early on in our conversation, empathy, right? So if you can put yourself in that person's shoes and start to see experience from their perspective and have that empathy, I think that you start to create a better experience. You take that ownership of, like, I need to have this conversation because this person invested their time and energy,
right.
So I need to go back and invest my time and energy as well. But I think that, you know, that story of going and interviewing and then you don't hear back or you're left waiting and
right.
hanging on, I mean, that hits close to home for family members and close friends of mine. And so, you know, I've used the statement, like, not all recruiters are created equal. And, you know, there are some people that this is what they do. It's in their blood. And then there are other recruiters that spend years trying to figure out how to recruit. So, you know, I think when we can all kind of take ownership of that experience and put ourselves in other people's shoes, you know, that'll help everyone in the long run.
Great. So before we move on, because I have a couple more questions to ask, we have a couple of people on the line, Shannon. I want to open up some lines and see if anybody has a question or a comment, and then we'll proceed on with our list of questions. Let's see. I've got area code 260. You're on HR Latte. Do you have a question for Shannon? Just a lurker. Okay, we're going to open up the lines for area code 305. Hello, you're welcome to HR Latte. Do you have a question for Shannon?
No, I'm just enjoying the show. Thanks.
Great. Can you tell us who you are?
This is John Nicolasian in Miami, Florida.
Hey, John, thanks for joining us. We're going to continue on with Shannon. If you have any questions or anything, I'll come back at you at the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in.
No problem.
Let's see, Shannon. So let's identify three key ways a hiring company can create a great candidate experience. We tell everybody all the time, you have to, you know, they need a better candidate experience. But
mm-hmm.
so often we aren't actually hearing how. How can we do this? So if you can identify three key ways, then maybe we can go from there.
Okay. So and I think that if the candidate experience had a theme song, I think it would be I Want You to Want Me by Cheap Trick, right? People want to feel wanted. Wouldn't that be a great theme song for the candidate experience? I Want You to Want Me, because that's what people want. Like, you don't want to feel like you are just being pushed, you know, through this process like a widget on a conveyor belt. Like, you want people to treat you like a person. You want, you don't want to be just another faceless application in some sort of system. Like, there's a person there. So I think that you're treating people, and you alluded to this too, right? Treating people with respect and treating people like they're a person, I think that is one of the keys. And then I think there's been this statement of, you know, content is king. There's so many blog posts
right.
and tweets and people talking about it at conferences. Content is king. But I think arguably I would say communication is king. Content may be like a queen or the jack of hearts or something, like, but communication to me I think is king. And if we can set expectations through communication early on, we stick to it, we're direct, personable, respectful, kind in our communication and keeping people informed throughout the process, I think that is a huge win and key number two.
Okay.
And then I think that the last thing is kind of understanding all of the different touch points and how do we make that experience for someone seamless or low effort. If we look at our digital presence, you know, what can we do within our ATS, within our career sites, what can we do online to offer seamless, low-effort, transparent experience for someone, I think that that is another big win or another key to creating a great experience. You know, it's not all about the online. It's not all about the ATS. There's the human element of human resources.
Absolutely.
There's that human element of recruiting, and we can't forget about that. We have to bring that into our strategy, our thought, and our interactions.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about maybe something that you have developed or you have done or witnessed or been a part of, a unique or the perfect way that you have added that human element, maybe by using some social media. How have you created a great experience? Do you have an example of that?
So I've got one that's kind of on the micro level that was very much a one-on-one experience, one-on-one interaction, and it goes back about 2 years or so. And I'm just one day looking through my Twitter feed, and I received a tweet from a college student who sent his profile and his resume to me, like, hey, check this out, I'm a job seeker. And so I happened to click on it, and it sent me to this website with his story. And his story was he was an international student, and if he didn't find a position within, I think it was a few months, he had to find it by May or June of that year, that he was going to have to move home, and he just wasn't ready to do that yet. So I picked up the phone after I read his site and called him. I think I caught him off guard a little bit. I just, you know, he tweets, I read, I call him.
Right.
I asked him to tell me more about his story. Like, who is he? What is he looking for? What are the types of opportunities? Where's his head at? And from that, I shared his story on Blogging for Jobs. And we kind of broke the story or started sharing his story. And after that, the Huffington Post picked him up and a couple other media outlets picked up his story. And he found a job. And so, you know, can you do that for everybody? No, but I think that is a really, you know, great way to say, like, there is power in social media as long as you're willing to make that in real life connection too.
Right, right. So that's a very positive story, you know, and we need to hear those kind of things and know that we can make a difference in somebody's life and
mm-hmm.
how important it is for us to remember that human side, the humanity of what we're doing. Is there a continued positive impact of employment branding when it comes to possibly diversity hiring? It sounds like that story definitely was part of that. Have you been a part of or experienced any other positive experiences? Or maybe you have a negative experience you can share.
So other positive experiences. At GEICO, we hosted a number of virtual career fairs on Facebook. So those were positive we were able to have a national job fair online, so people weren't having to travel. There wasn't the company expense. While I was there, we hosted two or three of those low-cost online, kind of high-tech, high-touch events. And from those, the company realized hires. So I think that was kind of a creative way to use a platform that
Definitely.
We were already using. I was trying to figure out, like, how do we get more value out of our Facebook? That was kind
of
fun.
And did you make hires as a result?
Yes, yeah, the company did make hires as a result of that. So I think with, like, first career fair, it cost, like, $50, and we had a hire. And so when you can kind of track that back from a cost per hire standpoint, talent acquisition was happy about that.
Absolutely.
Other positive social stories. You know, when you mentioned diversity, and I hadn't even made that connection with that story before, but at CEB, we recently worked on a video for our CEB Pride group. It's an affinity group for the LGBT community. And so being able to work for a company that is creating conversation and moving conversations forward within that community, within LGBT, was really, it was quite emotional for me, actually. I was really excited to be a part of that and to be part of an organization that is leveraging all of our resources to share the story of this community within inside our company. So that was a really positive experience from an employment brand standpoint as well as a staff engagement standpoint as well.
That's great. That's great. So how can we're wrapping up the show. I've got one last question to ask you, Shannon. Thanks so much for being my guest today on HR Latte. How can organizations get their staff in general? So we're talking about, you know, an admin assistant or a frontline sales guy. How can they get that part of their staff in general, folks that are outside of recruiting or HR, activated, engaged in social media and helping to create, I don't want to say the illusion, but the full picture, maybe, a more detailed picture of what it's like to work for an organization, which we know is the key to a valuable and truthful employment brand. What is it really like, right, so that you're attracting the right type of talent, the talent that will fit in with the organization? Does this make a difference to you, for the candidate, when other employees, the general staff, are involved? What do you think?
I think yes. I mean, we can, from a corporate communications or talent acquisition standpoint, we can create great messages that are transparent and authentic and honest, and we can put them on our career site and our corporate Facebook pages and in our print materials. But when we can activate our staff and create brand influencers, and we can get our teams involved in sharing the story, and we kind of create this army of messengers, you know, it's at that messenger level, that peer-to-peer. I'm more likely to trust something that one of my friends tells me than I am just reading an ad in a magazine, right? And so I think that we can utilize that to our benefit. So when you look at your company, if you've got 5,000 people, 10,000 people, 30,000 people, how can you equip them with the stories, and how do you find the people that are passionate about your organization to then share? And I think one of the biggest hurdles for some organizations, but not for others, is whether or not you allow social media access at work.
How can we
enable our staff to tell their story, or how can we encourage them to tell their story, but then Facebook is shut off and they can't access it? Are they really going to remember to forward an email home and then log on at 8 o'clock at night when the kids are in bed and
no,
then go share?
They're not.
No.
They're
so
not.
I think that's kind of step number one, is looking at your policies, procedures, your business, and figure out, like, do you have that hurdle? And if so, how can you either break through or get creative? If you don't have that, I think that it's just a blank canvas. The world's your oyster. I mean, how do you, there's so many ways that you could. And for me, it's been kind of grassrootsy recently, where I'm reaching out to people where I manage the Instagram account. I notice that there are CEBers that are posting photos. So I give them a call and say, hey, would you like to own our Instagram account? Let your friends know that you're doing it. Or we'll be launching a blog. And I certainly don't want to be writing all of the blog posts. So I'm looking for people that have an interest in writing. Like, do you have an itch to write? Because this allow you to scratch it. You know, like, let's get people involved. Whether or not your company has an internal social media or social collaboration tool, I think, is helpful. If you do, there are great ways to kind of troll that technology and see who's already having conversations that has the passion and the interest, and then reach out to them. So I think there are a lot of ways if you just kind of know where to look.
Right. And you've had great experiences in your past work experiences with Geico and creating a valuable employment brand. Did that in your experience, and has it at CEB been your experience that this changed or bettered those face-to-face communications when folks were coming in for interviews and they had been a part of a social branding project? That was the result of, they came in as a result of that, or the initial contact was the virtual fair on Facebook. Did it change how they felt? Did it change the atmosphere in the interview? Did it alter how they viewed the organization? Did it filter the process, right? Were you really connecting with the more closely aligned candidates?
That's a really good question. And I don't think it was anything we ever measured at Geico. But I can tell you, as employment branding has evolved and I've been playing in the sandbox and working in the space, I've learned a lot along the way as well. And one of the things that we did at CEB was try to measure quality of candidate from the perspective of our recruiters. And we've also had internal brand camps with our recruiters where we're equipping them with the right tools and information and knowledge to be able to create really exceptional experiences. And so I've got a baseline measurement. And then 6 months, 12 months, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we'll continue to measure that. And if we have the same conversation in 2018, I'd like to tell you, yes, it does.
Yeah, I would love to have this conversation.
Yeah, I don't have.
Shannon, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would be too anecdotal at this point. I'd rather have hard facts for you.
Right. Well, we'll come back to you then in 2018 and hopefully sooner. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Shannon Smedstat. You can reach her on Twitter at Shannon, SHANNONSMEDSTAD. Shannon Smedstat on Twitter. You can also find her on LinkedIn. She's happy to connect and answer any questions that anybody might have. We've had some activity on Twitter today, and hopefully some more information is being shared out and helping recruiters out there, as well as helping job seekers understand what recruiters face and the efforts that many of them are really trying in order to create a better, more positive candidate experience out there. I think we still have a ways to go, but I think we're in the right direction. Shannon, I always wrap up my show by asking a couple of quick hit questions that help us get to know you. And the purpose for this is that I'm selfishly using this show to learn about great places to eat and places to go and the things that people love. On top of, I still believe in the old adage that people buy from who they know, who they like, who they respect, and who they trust. And by buy, I mean I'm not buying anything from you, but I believe and trust you as a result of a friendship that we've developed and also an understanding about a similar work ethic. So let's kick off my questions. This is my favorite part of the show. What's your favorite food?
Anything Lebanese.
Ah, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. How did you get hooked on that?
So it was freshman year of college, and there were two girls that were in the dorm room next to me who are best friends to this day, and they are Lebanese. And I had never had hummus or falafel or baba ganoush. I mean, I'd never had any exposure to Mediterranean food, and I love them for introducing me to it.
And do you have a local restaurant you can give a shout-out to, or are you making your own Lebanese food?
Oh, I wish I was making my own, but I would give a shout-out to Mesa Cafe in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Next question. What is your, favorite book? I'm so excited about this. I don't know if you heard this announcement. My favorite awesome book is To Kill a Mockingbird. To Kill a Mockingbird. Came out with that they found a manuscript in Harper Lee's sister's safety deposit box. So is that your favorite book, or do you have?
It is, I'm not even saying that because I heard that there's a sequel. We actually, my second born, I have two girls. I wanted to name her Harper, and my middle name is Lee, and my husband was like, no.
I love that. I love that. So I have a dog in my neighborhood named Scout, and for a while my younger daughter's nickname was Scout, and it's all because of, because of the wonderful, wonderful book, Harper Lee. Thank God for her. What's your favorite place in the world? So I always qualify this by saying it could be a room in your house. It could be a part in your yard, a park. It could be a city, a far-off city, a destination. What's your favorite place in the world?
So I am a work-at-home mom, and snuggling on the couch with my kids, hands down, is my favorite place to be. Mm-hmm.
Still the same for me. I'm not going to get into that because I'll start crying. We already know the empty nesting I'm going through. So, and last but certainly not least, what is your favorite thing to do? Is that your favorite thing to do also?
No, I love my kids, but I need my me time as well. And
there you go.
I am kind of a newbie runner. I'm training for a 15K in April, and I love going for long runs outside.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, congratulations on that. I'll follow that journey. That's a whole new journey in and of itself. So enjoy the running time. That is definitely good me time. It has been a pleasure, Shannon. Thanks so much for joining me today. I look forward to learning more about the things that you're doing at CEB and really appreciate the time today.
Thank you.
Everyone, make sure you tune in. It's been great, Shannon. Make sure you tune in, everyone else, to various shows that are going to be coming up. I'm going to be speaking with different experts in recruiting and human resources. I've got a conversation scheduled with Stephanie Schnick. If you know Stephanie, she's been a longtime recruiter and is going to talk to us about the difference a great recruiter can make. We also have conversations with Reed Wilson out of Briggs International, who's going to discuss further about how valuable from the inside, from a corporate setting, how valuable the candidate experience is. And then we'll wrap this conversation up with Phil Hendrickson at the end of the month. And we're going to just continue this conversation. If you have any thoughts or questions, you can reach out to me on Twitter at Ray, R-A-Y underscore A-N-N-E, or certainly at HR Latte. This is HR Latte. Thanks for joining me today.